It's Tuesday, May 19th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Before we get things started, I just want to bring up a topic that came up in my workday today. As part of my job here as National Outreach Coordinator, I deal with lots of folks who are emailing Normal, wanting information about Normal and state laws and medical studies and so on, and they want to share that information on their websites. Now, we do have a whole bunch of stuff over at normal.org if you want to post it on your website, little banners and buttons and daily audio stash players and such. But when it comes to the Normal logo and the Normal content on the website, things like the state laws listings or the listings of chapters, that's copyrighted material and you can't just go posting that all over your website. I know most people doing this are well-meaning. They just want to spread the news about the growing truth about cannabis and the end of adult marijuana prohibition. But we also have to maintain some control over what is being branded as normal information. If you've got a website that looks like it's a normal site or purports to be a normal site and the information's inaccurate, well, that just hurts the normal reputation for everyone. So if you have some questions about whether or not your use of normal information on your website is recommended or not, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Most people are doing just fine, posting banners and links to our information or copying a paragraph here and there to make a point about medical marijuana or state laws. What we're worried about is wholesale copying of entire pages and graphics. So if you see any of those sites as well, you can let me know at stash@normal.org, and that will help us all keep Normal's impeccable reputation intact in cyberspace. Now, a couple shout-outs as well. I received email from a woman in Anchorage, Alaska, who's looking to join or form a Normal chapter up there. Anyone up in the Anchorage area, send me an email, and I'll be glad to get you guys in touch. And a couple from Vancouver, Washington, just across the river here from Portland, Oregon, who are looking to start up a chapter in Vancouver, Longview area. We've had numerous attempts to try to start and keep a Vancouver Normal up and running. So if you folks out there in the Vancouver area are interested in getting started, let me know, and I'll get you in contact with these other people. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, including a look at the Midwest, with Illinois' Senate considering a medical marijuana bill, a city councilman in Iowa busted for his use of medical marijuana, Minnesota passing medical marijuana out of their Senate, and Michigan's law enforcement exhibiting reefer madness over the new medical marijuana law. Joining us in our Government at Work segment will be Dan Lynn from Illinois Normal to give us the latest update on the Illinois Senate and medical marijuana. In our Daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, we've got Ian Lloyd with the Global Marijuana Music Awards Best Rock Song, O Depot. And in our second interview segment for Cannabis Conversations, I'm bringing back an interview from last year with Kevin Booth, the director, writer, producer of the documentary American Drug War, The Last White Hope. We're riding the rails of marijuana law reform all across the United States, so full steam ahead. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Sheriff arrested for selling marijuana. In Illinois, not only is the state preparing to legalize medical marijuana, it appears as though law enforcement is busy subverting the law for their own personal gain. From the Courier Press, Shawneetown, Illinois. Gallatin County Sheriff Raymond M. Martin of Shawneetown, Illinois, faces 3 counts of distribution of marijuana and 2 counts of carrying a firearm during and in relation to a drug trafficking crime. Martin was named in a 5-count federal complaint alleging he conspired with a confidential DEA source to distribute large quantities of marijuana. In an affidavit filed by a DEA agent, the agent stated that, quote, Martin stated the marijuana cost Martin $1,000 a pound and explained to the confidential source that after the initial $1,000 per pound investment was paid to Martin by the confidential source, Martin and the confidential source would split the profits on a 50-50 basis, end quote. The affidavit further states that, quote, on 2 different occasions, Martin delivered about 10 pounds of marijuana and on another occasion delivered approximately 20 pounds of marijuana to the confidential source, end quote. The alleged marijuana deliveries usually occurred at a rural and remote location in southern Gallatin County, prosecutors stated. Martin is accused of using his county-owned Ford Explorer to complete the transactions. Dude Master, who wrote this post, asks, what would cause a sheriff, a career law enforcement officer, to turn his back on law enforcement? My father, a Vietnam War protester and adamant cannabis activist from long ago, once told me that one had to not have a conscience to be a law enforcement officer, and all are just as corruptible as anyone else. His words are true. If we had a legal cannabis market, this sheriff wouldn't have the motivation to sell illegal cannabis to supplement his greed. Provided that Illinois has a vote pending in the legislature on medical marijuana, I have to pause for a moment in regards to the timing of this arrest and subsequent press release by the federal authorities. Iowa City Councilman with Crohn's disease busted for medical marijuana use. From KCAU, Sioux City. Steve Rank has served on the Everly, Iowa City Council for the past 7 years. He's also served on various committees and volunteer positions in the town. His battle with Crohn's disease has been about twice as long, and now his position in town is in jeopardy as he tries to find a way to cope with pain. Quote, any one of these drugs here, you can die from overdosing, end quote, said Rank as he looked over his small arsenal of prescribed medications. Quote, any one of these drugs here have serious, serious side effects, end quote. Rank says the side effects include abdominal pains, nausea, and bloody stool, the same symptoms of the disease they're supposed to treat. Rank says his choice to use marijuana for medicinal purposes puts him in a hard spot since it's not legal to do so in Iowa. Plus, it makes things difficult as a public figure. Rank says he will plead guilty to the charges and face the consequences, but hopes future chronic pain sufferers won't have to do the same. Quote, when I was at the jail, the deputy asked me, I imagine you're not going to smoke marijuana again. And I told him, well, yeah, I am. And he looked at me, and it's like, you took my drug, but you did not take my disease, end quote, said Rank. The reactions from the townspeople were staggeringly dispassionate. One said, any kind of drug used by anybody, whether you're on council or not, is wrong. If it's illegal, leave it alone. Another said, he's a good councilman. What he did was wrong, and gosh, I don't know. If he wants to give it up, that should be his choice. End quote. And a third said, there's no reason to have a vote. I think he should do the right thing and step down. Day after day, I read these stories and I struggle to find a new way to express my frustration at the people who subscribe to the because I said so justification for locking up sick people who use marijuana. It's against the law, they think, so just don't do it. But gee, when I use this non-toxic plant, my guts stop hurting long enough for me to eat. It's illegal, don't do it. Take a pill. But gosh, the pill hurts my guts worse. It's legal though. Take it. Marijuana is illegal because it's bad, because it's illegal, because it's bad, because it's illegal, because it's bad, because it's illegal, because they said so. And that's that. It's simple for them. Marijuana is evil. People that use marijuana are evil. Maybe that guy is sick, but it doesn't matter because you don't cure someone with evil. Maybe it does help that sick guy. But it doesn't matter, because his word is the word of an evil person. Even if there are many sick people who are really helped by it, it doesn't matter, because you don't unleash evil on society just to help a few people. If I could appear on television tomorrow spouting facts from the government's own databases, studies from the government's own researchers, and quotes from the government's own judges regarding marijuana, to a solid shrinking base of Americans, they would just see Satan incarnate and truly believe my aim is to addict their children to heroin. They'd afford my data the same respect we'd give studies from R.J. Reynolds on tobacco safety from the 1950s, despite the fact I'm gathering it from the same place the government uses to crow about the supposed achievements in the drug war. Any reasonable argument or appeal to logic will be considered fancy double talk because, after all, I smoke marijuana, so I'm an evil person, and all my words are lies. Satan was a good talker, too. Councilman Rake says he's leaving the state soon. I hope he's moving to Michigan or one of the other 12 medical marijuana states. I hope he's able to leave and not stuck in some Iowa jail suffering from Crohn's disease. Minnesota House passes medical marijuana 70-64. On to Governor Pawlenty's veto. First, the good news. Twin Cities Pioneer Press. After a decade of debate, the Minnesota House and Senate have passed versions of a bill that would sanction medical marijuana use in the state. The House, taking up the issue for the first time, narrowly approved a version this evening, 70-64. The Senate, which had approved a version last month, then approved the House's version, 38-28. The bill now heads to Governor Tim Pawlenty. Now the bad news. The House version was narrowed considerably from the Senate bill. A provision allowing patients to grow their own marijuana plants was removed, and a controversial amendment restricted the use of marijuana to terminally ill patients suffering a debilitating illness. The latter amendment removes medical marijuana eligibility for cancer patients undergoing chemotherapy who need the drug to combat nausea. A medical marijuana bill that doesn't allow cancer patients to use it? Only terminally ill patients? And they can't grow their own, they must get the medicine from a state-licensed dispensary? Let's see, who's not terminally ill? Federal marijuana patient L.V. Musica wouldn't qualify for her glaucoma. Federal marijuana patient Irv Rosenfeld wouldn't qualify for his painful bone disease. People living with AIDS, multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, Alzheimer's disease, they're not necessarily terminal. Certainly chronic migraines and other chronic pain wouldn't qualify. Same goes for the chronic nausea common among gastrointestinal disorders. Governor Pawlenty has promised to veto the medical marijuana bill, and as amended, I can't say I'd be too broken up about that. Most Minnesotans aren't going to realize how flawed this bill is, and if the governor signs it, much of the public will be satisfied that they are the 14th medical marijuana state, and the issue will subside. Better that he veto this awful bill. It will stir up reaction to the medical marijuana passing the House and Senate, but being stymied by one man, which will help efforts to run medical marijuana as a statewide initiative for a constitutional amendment. The initiative would have to have better language, at least protect cancer patients, for God's sakes, and as a constitutional amendment, it would be far safer from the meddling hands of law enforcement's pawns in the House.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Medical marijuana is nightmare for some Michigan law enforcement. Escanaba, Michigan.
A law enforcement official from the Upper Peninsula Substance Abuse Enforcement Team called Michigan's newly legalized medical marijuana law, quote, a nightmare, end quote. Detective Lieutenant Jeffrey Seen of the task force discussed the new law and its implications for police agencies and county prosecutors. He said the law is ambiguous and has a lot of loopholes. Racine said the confusion may cause officers to get to the point where they may not enforce what law is left regarding marijuana for fear of litigation.
Oh, my stars and garters, the poor police officers.
It is so confusing when you can't just lock up every person you find with weed. Now they have to actually investigate the situation. Now they can't slap the cuffs on a cancer patient or throw the AIDS patient in the back of the squad car. They have to verify paperwork and legal status of patients. Why, it's so confusing, they just might not bust anybody for marijuana. That'll show us.
Racine also said there is not a lot of talk about some of the negative side effects or the fact, he said, that marijuana is a gateway drug. He explained, quote, not every person who smokes marijuana becomes a crack smoker or a heroin user, but every person who does the hard stuff started with marijuana, end quote.
Not every idiot employing logical fallacies becomes a police officer or a narcotics detective, but every cop who opposes medical marijuana starts with idiotic logical fallacies. Detective Racine suffers from post hoc ergo propter hoc reasoning, the idea that if B follows A, A must have caused B. All hard drug users started with pot, therefore pot leads to hard drug use. But actually, statistics show that the first mind-altering substance any cocaine or heroin user ever started with was alcohol. So, drinking beer leads to heroin addiction, right, Detective Racine? Time to repeal the 21st Amendment, right, Detective Racine? Look, 95.9 million American adults have tried marijuana. 2 million adults used cocaine last month. 133,000 adults used heroin last month. That means I could find you 721 American adults who have tried marijuana, and in that group, there would be 15 current cocaine users and one current heroin user. That's not a gateway. That's a 10-inch hole cut in a chain-link fence guarded by a psychotic pit bull. For comparison's sake, based on these numbers, about 2% of the people who have tried marijuana are using cocaine. It is about as likely that a college football player will become a pro football player. About 0.14% of the people who have tried marijuana are using heroin. It is a little more likely than the chance of a high school football player making it to the pros, which is 0.09%. But even that's not a perfect analogy because at least there is some causal relationship between playing high school football and playing pro football. The only characteristic marijuana shares with heroin and cocaine is illegality.
Racine said statistics show us that there are 10 times more people driving vehicles under the influence of drugs than there are drunks on the road.
Really? I'd love to see those statistics and the definition of drugs and driving under the influence. If the roads are already so full of drugged up drivers, how is the medical marijuana law, which exempts people who are likely already using marijuana, going to make that any worse? It sounds to me that by freeing up the time you'd spend busting sick people, the law is actually giving you more time to catch impaired drivers on the road.
Racine said, quote, "The way the law was written, it is written in favor of the user and against law enforcement. Do you want the brakes changed on your car by a guy who smoked marijuana on his lunch hour? A very large percentage of people are going to abuse this law."
Strange how that medical marijuana law was written to protect the sick and dying people who use medical marijuana instead of making law enforcement's job easy. I'm also wondering how I'm any safer if the brake mechanic is having a beer on his lunch hour. That's perfectly legal, and he doesn't even need a doctor's recommendation. This law doesn't allow brake mechanics to puff away their lunch hour any more than legal beer allows them to drink away the afternoon.
Racine also said it's likely many people will try to cloak themselves in the law wrongfully. He said, quote, "Probably 90% of the medical defenses are going to be false, and that's a low guess," end quote.
So, Detective Racine, what you're saying is that the doctors of Michigan are so incompetent they can be fooled 90% of the time. People in Michigan using medical marijuana must have their conditions confirmed by a doctor. That means exams and a bunch of medical documentation. Often, the primary care physician won't even recommend medical marijuana because of restrictions by their insurance plans or clinics or hospitals. That means many, if not most, patients must see a second doctor at a medical marijuana clinic to get their card. What Detective Racine and other law enforcement mean when they say a medical marijuana law is going to be abused is that people who don't outwardly appear desperately ill or wheelchair-bound, people Detective Racine thinks are healthy enough to wear handcuffs and sit in a squad car, will be protected from arrest. Detective Racine is upset that he doesn't get to make the medical determination as to whether someone deserves medical marijuana. Detective Racine and his ilk are steaming mad that some people in Michigan will smoke marijuana and not be punished for it. They cannot separate pot smoker from criminal and pot from crime any more than you can convince neo-Nazis that people of all colors are equals and cats not to chase mice.
Dear Mr. President, last November, you were elected on a platform of change. You promised the country reform on the political system. Well, let me tell you what Normal.org and many other Americans want changed. Marijuana laws. It was estimated that America made its 20 millionth arrest for marijuana possession this year. You want a real economic problem? How about the amount of money being spent on simple possession arrests? Incarcerating people costs taxpayers around $23,000 per year, and Normal estimates that up to $10 billion a year are spent on enforcement for mostly nonviolent offenders. Now let's imagine what would happen if marijuana was legal. Not only would we save billions each year on enforcement, but imagine the economic boost. You would produce jobs growing, selling, and tax dollars coming in from the regulation of marijuana. I'm not saying let people loose to sell on the streets. Put government regulation into tax and control at sales like alcohol. Street dealers are the problem, not a guy with a gram in his pocket. Put in harsh punishments for people who drive under the influence, and stop punishing people who enjoy marijuana safely in their home. Mr. President, if you really want change, legalize marijuana.
Tuesday is our look at your government at work here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws.
Body dies, the eagle flies, the bird stays.
you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work.
Pollution rises high into the sky. How can we still deny?
Well, some of us on the Daily Audio Stash were sitting by our computers watching the live stream from the Illinois Senate, all in anticipation of the hearing for the, or the vote for the medical marijuana bill there, and it didn't seem to come up. But joining us here to talk about the future of medical marijuana in the state of Illinois is Dan Lynn from Illinois Normal. Welcome back, Dan.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Boy, I was watching some of that feed, and it seems like you guys have a whole lot of bills relating to personalized plates there. It's kind of strange what's going on there in the Senate. Can you kind of break down what happened?
Well, we're still anticipating the vote on Senate Bill 1381, which would be the Compassionate Use of Medical Cannabis Pilot Program Act. We believe that we have the 30 votes that would be needed to get it out of the Senate and send it over to the House. Now it's just a matter of waiting for the Senate to go through all the other bills that have been called for every single subject from here to the moon.
Yeah.
We've got to wait for these bills to be called, and then once it's our turn, we'll have a vote.
Now, is this a case where there's a difference between the House and the Senate version? They're going to have to reconcile something?
As introduced, the bills were the same. However, the House bill has kind of faltered and dropped off to the side. The Senate bill has been amended to try and appease some of law enforcement's concerns. But if it does make it out of the Senate, then that Senate bill, as amended, would have to go through the House of Representatives in Illinois.
Okay, so you were saying you think you've got the 30 votes on the Senate side. What do things look like on the House side?
Well, in the Illinois House of Representatives, we need to get 60 votes out of 118 representatives. We were looking at about 40 or 45 on a good day during our lobbying efforts a few weeks ago. But I think if we can get a favorable showing in the Senate, that'll give us some of the political momentum that we need to get those extra votes in the House.
Okay. And so I guess our listeners then would be best served by contacting the Illinois House members. Would that help?
Yes. If they've already contacted their Illinois state senator, they can contact their Illinois state representative. And obviously tell them to support medical cannabis in Illinois and to vote yes on Senate Bill 1381. And it's also helpful to give the governor's office a call and let him know how everyone feels about getting medical cannabis in Illinois.
Okay. And do you have contact links over at the Illinois Normal website?
We do have contact links at the Illinois Normal website, or people can call the state capital directory at 217-782-2000. And the operator at the state directory can connect them to their state senator, state representative, or the governor's office.
All right, that's excellent. And the website, for folks that don't know, is illinoisnormal.org. Spell out the whole state, I-L-L-I-N-O-I-S, normal.org, and you'll get all the information you need. Now, Dan, how has the fight been going as far as reaction in the media? Are you getting a lot of positive play from the newspapers and the TV around there?
You know, up until a couple of weeks ago, we had a tremendous amount of positive coverage, but now we're starting to get a little bit of blowback and some flack from the police chiefs across the state. Just this past week, there was a police chief from the city of Rockton who wrote an op-ed column against the medical cannabis legislation, and we've got a group called Educating Voices that has organized a little bit of opposition towards our bills. But the media has been giving us a pretty decent amount of coverage positively, but now they have to start covering some of the opposition's arguments. But I think if we can get this vote in the Senate to be a positive one and favorable for us, that would really help us out and just send a whirlwind of positive media attention our way.
Good. Now, is there any geographic difference in the support for medical marijuana in the state? Are there certain areas of the state that we really need to convince to call their representatives, or is it the same all over?
The biggest area that we would like to see people in a concentrated effort contacting their state senators and state representatives would be in the collar counties of the Chicagoland area. So folks from Lake County, McHenry County, Kane County, DuPage, Kendall, and Will counties up in northeastern Illinois, that's where we have some legislators who should be supportive of this issue. but they're really not as supportive as they need to be, and we need folks from those areas to be contacting their lawmakers in Springfield.
Okay, the collar counties around the Chicagoland area, tag, you're it. Get in touch with your Illinois House of Representatives member and urge them to support this medical marijuana legislation. It's time that the people that are suffering in Illinois, the sick, dying, sense-threatened, severely disabled people, they don't need to be arrested for this. This is ridiculous. Illinois can be the 14th medical marijuana state. Heck, if Michigan can do it, Illinois can do it, don't you think?
I agree.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again on The Stash here, and we'll be back in touch hopefully later this week. You think the vote will probably take place this week?
I hope so. I think that they're just getting through the House bills, and that once when they get onto the Senate bills, we should be one of the first ones to get called for a floor vote.
Okay, we'll keep in touch, and we'll have that up on The Stash as soon as it comes up. Thank you, Dan Lynn from Illinois Normal.
Thanks, Russ.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards.
Here's the winner of 2009's Global Marijuana Music Awards Best Rock Song, Oh Depot, by Ian Lloyd. Ian Lloyd is a veteran rock star, cemented in rock and roll history with his worldwide number one hit, Brother Louie. Ian's solo career has produced 6 noteworthy albums. His distinctive voice can be heard on major artist songs such as Foreigner's Waiting for a Girl Like You and Billy Joel's I Go to Extremes. The Ian Lloyd sound has touched a generation and resonates as strongly as ever. The Ian Lloyd Band continues his tradition of powerful vocals and electric performances. Keep updated about Ian Lloyd at myspace.com/IanLloydsStories. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's 2009's GMMA Best Rock Song by Ian Lloyd, Oh Depot.
I don't know anything at all. St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations. One of the most important drug war documentaries to come out in a long time here is called American Drug War, The Last White Hope, and we're joined now by the writer, producer, director of the film, Kevin Booth. Kevin, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you, Russ, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. You know, I think we should, let's start with the title of the movie, American Drug War, The Last White Hope, particularly the ending part of that. Why are you calling the drug war The Last White Hope?
Well, it comes, if you watch the film, it will make sense. It's kind of a double meaning type of thing, actually a triple meaning. In the film, it's first used by former DEA agent Celerino Castillo, who was stationed at the Ilopango airport in Central America during Iran-Contra, and he basically witnessed firsthand U.S. cargo planes being loaded with cocaine bound for American military bases. He even had a camera, and he had a lot to do with bringing Oliver North to trial. And they used to refer to Oliver North as the last white hope after, in a sarcastic kind of way, after he got away with all of the crime, you know, bringing all the drugs into the American ghettos, and then was able to just walk away as a millionaire and run for a state senate. And he was like, so he was kind of like thought of like the last white hope to come out of this whole Reagan debacle.
Okay. So, In recent politics now, we've seen with the Democratic presidential race, Barack Obama, they've tried to tie him to controversial remarks by Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Specifically, one of the remarks is how Jeremiah Wright talks about the U.S. government inventing crack cocaine and bringing it to the inner cities. And your documentary focuses a little bit on that CIA and crack cocaine connection. Give our listeners kind of a breakdown of the truth, the potential truth in those remarks by Reverend Wright.
Well, yeah, definitely, and it's kind of a sad affair. You know, I almost wonder if Obama is having to distance himself just because of the game of politics when he knows, you know, it's obviously a lot of things that guy is saying is true, right? I mean, and everybody knows it, and yet everybody's having to act all outraged. But, no, that's correct. One of the main characters in American Drug War, you can see it at AmericanDrugWar.com, is a guy named Freeway Ricky Ross, who's still in prison right now. Ricky Ross was kind of the head of the distribution unit here in California back in the 80s into the 90s, and it turned out that Ricky's cocaine source, a guy by the name of Danilo Blandone, was working with the CIA, and basically the CIA was unable, and they were unable to get the funding to run the Contra War when the Contras are fighting the Sandinistas. And so in order to raise money for this war, they started selling cocaine, and the CIA basically, through some of their you know, black ops and some of their connections, started a pipeline of cocaine coming back up into America that ended up here in Southern California. Ricky Ross then took it. He was just basically a young entrepreneur. He was smart enough to rise above the gang affiliations, but he realized that the street gangs were the best distribution network that was already totally in place. So he rose above it. He didn't affiliate himself, so he was able to deal with the Bloods, the Crips, all the Latin gangs, everybody, because he had a better prices than everybody else. He was making millions of dollars a day for several years, going, you know, uncaught, just right under the radar screen on everybody. And this money was basically funneling back, you know, through the CIA and back to the Contra Revolution.
Wow. And so it's just amazing some of the things that we learn in this documentary. And I've been a longtime drug law reformer, and I've seen the movie. It did debut on Showtime. If you've got the Showtime cable network, you can probably see it in rotation still, I imagine. But we wanted to talk a little bit about how people can get the movie for themselves. You mentioned the website, AmericanDrugWar.com. I also understand that you're dropping the DVD in stores coming up soon.
Yeah, it'll be in many stores. I'm not sure which all ones now. It's getting kind of squeezed to the pipeline right now of distribution. The official street date is May 27th, coming out through Passion River Films. I'm not sure, you know, it should be in many stores out there. But you can find it on Amazon already. And, of course, if you go to AmericanDrugWar.com, we're actually running a deal right now in support of Barney Frank's bill, where if you buy one DVD for yourself, we will, for no extra charge, send a DVD in your name to the congressman, senator, or state representative of your choice in support of the Barney Frank bill.
Wow, that's an excellent campaign. We'll get that up on our website, too, at stash.normal.org, so people can find all the links. I think that's a fabulous idea. It does need to be seen by our congressmen and our senators. It shows so much about the drug war, its history in racism and anti and competition between some of the existing markets that were trying to make drugs illegal for the control of people. It's a great primer on everything you need to know about how the drug war came about and how it continues to stay in business. And to take this maybe to a personal level, Kevin, I was wondering what motivated you to get involved into making a documentary of this breadth. I understand it took quite a long time to put together.
Yeah, I spent over 4 years on this thing, much help from my wife, Trey. But, you know, my original thing, my close friend, Bill Hicks, who is a popular comedian who's been dead now over 13 years, he died of cancer. You know, you can't definitely link his cancer back to his cigarette smoking. But, you know, and I know he has cancer in his family, but I just, you know, he's one of those guys where he smoked and drank so hard and so bad. I just know that if he hadn't have been such a heavy smoker, he would have lived longer, at least, if he'd maybe not still be alive today. Cut to a few years after that, my brother, who was 9 years older than me, suffered from schizophrenia. He passed away due to a brain seizure brought on by taking his legal doses of pharmaceutical drugs. Actually, he was ordered by the court staff to take these drugs. He didn't have a choice, and these drugs ended up giving him brain seizures. This was not recreational use. This was just the use that he was supposed to be doing. Cut to several years later, my mother dying of liver failure due to alcohol, and then a few years later, my dad dying from cigarettes and alcohol. And my parents, you know, my parents were the corporate World War II generation, you know, the martini lunch. My dad was the board of directors of a big corporation, you know, so forth. You know, these were, you know, very responsible people. But, you know, seeing my parents, you know, drink to the point where if I was to have ever done drugs and gotten anywhere near as intoxicated as they used to get every day, they would have, you know, locked me in a mental institution. So it growing up as a child, just the hypocrisy of, being able to watch my parents just get swacked on booze every night, and then at the same time having them talk about how the Beatles were evil because of how they introduced drugs and how it got my brother hooked on drugs and, you know, the evil scourge of drugs while they're, you know, we're down in their Dewar scotch and vodka. So it's just the hypocrisy of how we have these corporations that are allowed to sell the alcohol, tobacco, and pharmaceuticals that kill almost a million Americans a year, while at the same time we have almost over a million Americans sitting in prison for nonviolent drug offenses. It's just ridiculous. But plus, you know, all illegal drugs kill just about 11,000 people a year, which is like about how many people die from lightning or snake bites.
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, far more people are dying from the tobacco, the alcohol, and the pharmaceutical drugs. When I'm doing the podcast, I often refer to it as the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, because we're certainly not fighting for some sort of drug-free America, judging by the commercials on TV.
Well, it's just all about protecting their profit. It's just, you know, what my movie, I believe, attempts to show is just this, just really all about the money. You don't have to have a conspiracy theory to prove any of this. You just follow the money. And, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And where there's a lot of money to be made, somebody's going to be doing it. And, you know, we've long passed that, you know, through the looking glass here in America, where people really don't care if they're killing or destroying other people's lives to make a buck.
Yeah, it's an amazing film. I encourage everyone to check it out. Check out the website at AmericanDrugWar.com. Get yourself a copy of the DVD. Host yourself a house party. Get more people to see this. We need everyone out there to learn the truth about the drug war and how it came about. Only through knowing the truth about it can we start to dismantle it. Like you said, it is all about profit. We've got to find some way of attacking that motive. All right, Kim.
Yeah, I just, you know, I think, you know, we're going to just have to all stand together. I mean, you know, my experience in the reform movement is that a lot of the groups all have differing opinions and differing ways of thinking how to reform drugs. But if everybody could just, you know, join up and at least, you know, if you just divide all Americans into two categories, those who think the drug war is working and those who don't, and see, you know, which one has more numbers. And so if we all stand together and we all stand united and we're not afraid to stand up for these things, especially people who don't smoke pot, you guys are the ones that need to realize that this thing affects you just as much as everybody else, because this isn't just something that affects people who want to smoke pot, because that's what the government has you know, propagandize everybody into believing that wanting to legalize marijuana is just some stoner fantasy. It's not. This is about the pharmaceutical companies being allowed to just destroy our lives.
Well put. Thank you. Kevin Booth, the director, writer, and producer of American Drug War, The Last White Hope. The DVD's coming out on May 27th. Get yourself a copy. And Kevin, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you so much, and you know, I look forward to working more with Normal in the future, and there's already a link to it on my website, AmericanDrugWar.com, and check out SacredCow.com, and look forward to a future with you guys.
All right, thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thank you.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from the United States Constitution's Bill of Rights, your Fifth Amendment. Quote, "No person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself
nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation." End quote. In other words, you have the right to remain silent. You do not have to testify against yourself, and that means talking to police officers. You know how they say anything you say can and will be used against you, and you have a right to remain silent? Well, you do, and the Fifth Amendment gives that to you, so use it. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.